The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This week, we hear more from my recent conversation with Brittany Graham, acting executive director of the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, Ellie Taylor with VANDU and the Western Aboriginal Harm Reduction Society, and Caitlin Shane, staff lawyer at the Pivot Legal Society. Now, forgive the redundancy, but to make it easier to associate voices with names, we'll start with them introducing themselves.
I'm Ellie Taylor, lived experience advocate, and I'm on I Raise the Rights Coalition, VANDU, and WARS.
Hi, I'm Brittany Graham. I'm a longtime community organizer here at VANDU, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Shane. I'm a staff lawyer with Pivot Legal Society and work really closely with the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users.
There are two elements I want to ask about. As I mentioned, Canada and Vancouver in particular have been really leading as far as North America in harm reduction and policy reform. There are two elements I wanted to ask about in particular, safe spaces and safe supplies. And you've had Insight around for the last couple of decades. Now you've got overdose prevention sites in operation around the nation, although some have come under attack, Lethbridge Overdose Prevention Society over in Alberta. Yeah, so what's happening, and you at VANDU would certainly know something about safe consumption spaces. What's happening now?
I think what we're hearing from other places, obviously this is anecdotal, but it's coming down to the municipalities and the bylaws and whether they can get spaces as drug user organizations to set up their programs. So I think that's a big part about it is like, what are those local bylaws? What is the local government's position on drugs and drug use and everything related to that? Because like here in Vancouver, there are barriers to things, but in general, there is more of an appetite for harm reduction. And so like, it is easier to get those sort of programs off the ground. Not that it still isn't hard in other ways, but we hear of places like Chilliwack or Surrey or places that are 2 hours away where their bylaws are really intense and the business associations are really intense and there's a real hatred for people who use drugs and it's impossible to get programs off the ground. So I think that's a big part of it now is like, it's not just like setting up, it's like they come after you in a million different ways.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They get the funding, like they get the funding from that, Health Canada or whatever it is. And then, everyone's all fired up because of course everyone's on the ground. We're all ready for this and we've already got all this infrastructure in place and we're planning for decades. And the thing is that as soon as they give it out, right, then all of a sudden they even have the money to open a compassion club, let's say. This is a I'm giving an example of something that good and might have happened. And so they got the funding for it because it's come from those bodies of government and from those funders. However, as soon as they go to open up shop, all of a sudden they can't get a license or the cops are there to bother them. Or the BIA, which also I have to mark for myself as someone that I understand holds a ton of influence, too much influence over policing, too much influence over those streets. And, of course the BIAs are not, there's hardly been a BIA which is going to be supportive of this. I'm telling you that. It's very rare to find one. And when you do find one in any community, you have to really build that connection over a long time and stack it kind of, right? And have people come onto it that are allies. It has to be a progressional thing. We don't have time to do that. We have no time to be around with anything. We have to save lives on the street as soon as possible. And what's happening is, so all that money is there, ready. The groups are ready, and some are kind of just planning. Some are emerging. Some have already been doing their work for quite a while. But the problem is, everybody else is, we don't want those kind of people around here, those kind of people.
Yeah. And even beyond that, like Bandu has a long history of unsanctioned injection facilities, a part of our work here, because we recognize that people use drugs, and to be activists, they needed a safe place to use drugs so that they could continue their work. And so that's always been a part of Bandu. But in, I think it was 2014 or 2015, we got a letter from Vancouver Coastal Health that said, we know you have this facility. Someone's tipped us off from our internal system, and it's like now on the books. You have to shut it down. If you do not shut it down, we won't give you your money anymore. And so we had to make the decision to stop our unsanctioned injection facility. And then we had to do all this like political work where we had like a van, and people could go to the van and it would drive around and all that kind of stuff. And then within 2 years, the overdose crisis was declared. We got a phone call from that very same health authority that said, we need you to start an OPS. OPSs are allowed now. And so I went home on Monday. There was no discussion of that. I didn't work on Tuesday. I came in on Wednesday and we had an OPS. So we had a 24-hour turnaround from when they asked us to when we could do it. And it was like insane to watch it happening, because it's like all of a sudden the tides have changed. Enough people have died politically. It makes sense. So here you go. You can do it. So I feel like that's a pretty extreme example, but I can see that happening in other communities pretty regularly, where it's just like no one gives a about people until there's like enough bodies, and then all of a sudden they decide to.
Literally, until they start to realize that they're looking really bad because they're not doing anything. And it's so like, man, it's so par for the course. This and the province gets all the glory for being so progressive and sanctioning these overdose prevention sites. And it's like, what about a few years ago when you were literally telling Bandu that it had to stop saving lives and you forced them to shut? Like, that is, it makes me sick to my stomach. And it is an extreme example, but it's not uncommon. You know, we're even seeing in our advocacy that the three of us and others have been doing around decriminalization with the province, is like, this is a fight that we've been fighting for decades. People around that table have devoted their lives to this. We've lost our friends and our communities fighting for this. Government decides one day that they want to put this on their agenda because they want to check a box and make it seem like they're doing something. And then they rush through the process and they don't listen to us and they don't take their feedback. And then they look really awesome in the newspaper because they came up with the idea to decriminalize. And it's like, it's the same thing over and over again, where they all over drug users for trying to do the right thing. Then they decide they want to do it too. Then they get all the glory for it. And they stop listening to people who use drugs. It's just like, it's maddening.
Yeah. And like, we can see that even right now with their funding structures. Like, I think Bandu is one of the only drug user groups that has like sustainable funding. So, and that's just from like extreme activism that was done 20 years ago. And, you know, can they take that away from us? It would look really bad. So, you know, that is what it is. But for all these other drug user groups that are starting up or are continuing to do their work, like, they're really hustling and trying to figure out how to continue to do their work with very little money. And like, when we're seeing the funding structures, like coming from the BC Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions through the like Overdose Aware Emergency Response Committee, I think it is, OERC, you know, like, there's millions and millions of dollars going to treatment and other health, public health measures, but like actually to drug user groups to do peer led work, there's $1 million that was set aside for this year, and then 1 million for the year before, and 1 million for the year before there. So that's $3 million that has been put towards drug user groups. And realistically, like, an organization like Bandu to do like all of our work to like, and we have, you know, hundreds of people that come in here to use our services on a daily basis. Like, some people it's drop in, get their rigs and leave, but like, they're still here coming to meetings, et cetera, all that stuff. It, you know, our budget's like $500,000 and we like stretch it very, very far. So like $1 million for every drug user group in this province is not enough money. It's just not. And like literally every overdose prevention thing that has happened that we're like, that's so innovative. This is amazing. Like naloxone trainings, safe injection facilities, like compassion club models, decriminalization. These are all ideas that came from drug user groups. So if you don't grow those groups and don't give money to them, like we're going to be stuck in this like system of six people a day dying forever, because like the actual people who have the knowledge of how to create change are not actually being able to do the work because they can't even keep their doors open. They can't pay their people. And it's not like they're getting paid well, you know, like our stipends here are, but we try to do as much as we can with what we can, because either we increase our stipends and there's less programs and less days or less hours, and people don't want to do that. So, you know, they'll have stipends so that more people can work here and more people can be here. But
I'd like to mention them, and Brittany, just to bring a little bit of happiness to that thing. I was thinking about the, how that was like, you know, the stipends is something that's very controversial in every organization, right? And honestly, though, I like it because I honestly think, look, I'm Van Du not because of money, okay? I'm Van Du because of the heart. I'm Van Du because this is the cause, because we have to save lives. It's not because I want to sit around being employed for 3 years. I'm here because that person on the street only has one day, right? So let's break this down a bit more. And let's look at that and say, okay, if it's not about the money, then it has to be about the art. We have people coming to these meetings, engaging. We have a new drugs group, which is really exponentially growing. We've got a lot of wonderful things happening here. So I just wanted to say that, even though I don't receive tons of, you know, stripers all the time. I mean, I could maybe, but you don't get my point, right? That I'm quite happy here with Van Du fighting the struggle, because you know what? This isn't about money. This is about the fact that when I walk out that door, people respect me. And I respect myself. I can sleep at night because I'm not one of those that walks by. Right? So I have to say, a stripers is not a concern for me. No, it's a concern for you.
Well, it's more a concern when like we're seeing like, you know, the drug policy person for like, you know, MMH or whatever, they're making like $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year, whatever it is. And, you know, that's half of our annual budget for our organization.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's really the point for us, is it's like, yeah, we all get paid like, and that's going to be a part of it. We're here to be a part of a movement. And sometimes that is more beneficial than actual money, but it is super annoying when you're in the room with someone.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, $100,000 would have paid for, you know, a pay increase for, you know, 50 yeah. volunteers to yes. $2 more an hour or something, or $3 more an hour, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that's a big part of it. It's like, where's the money going for drug money or drug policy or
yeah.
treatment or any of those sorts
or
of things?
Or even detox or anything. Where's the money going? That's a question I'd like to know. Yeah.
Well, it's about sustainability. It's not necessarily about individual incomes. It's like people need to be able to live in order to do yes. their work and in order to not burn out. And yes. unfortunately, that can cost money. And so it's, you know, if our movement is going to be healthy and able to withstand the daily storm that is right now, sometimes money is, unfortunately, the thing that is like needed.
You're right. I just, for me, it's, I'm always like,
I know. I hear you.
But I also think it's like more,
it's
like
a balance between both of us,
you know,
and all of us.
Yeah. And like the stuff that they're, so when we're looking at governments and they're saying like decrim is a public health issue, not a police issue, and like drug policy is a public health issue, not a policing issue or a criminal issue. Well, if we look at the money says that we really support police and criminalization. Like here in Vancouver, the like annual budget for the police is somewhere around 20% of the Vancouver city budget. So like the money talks and the money says we value policing, we value criminalization, and I think that's
we value oppression. Yeah.
And so, like, we're instead of being like this, these groups of people are the ones that have really created every innovative public health measure in the last 20 years, and they're still getting diddly squat. It's because they don't actually respect people who use drugs still, you know, like, and that's what we're coming up against. Like, people, individuals do, obviously, like, there are people who work with us and we respect and that kind of stuff, but the system itself doesn't.
We're the garbage that they want to take off the block, you know? That's, I mean, I'm being brutal, fairly honest. We're the garbage that they wish they swept away.
I know down here we've been putting up with every politician, whatever affiliation will say, you know, they all have learned to say that we can't arrest our way out of all this. They've all learned to say that, and then they go ahead and keep on putting in policies that try to arrest our way out of things. It's just frustrating.
Well, it's like the BC, like, Association of Chiefs of Police all said that they believe in decriminalization, and then when this policy came out from the BC Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions, they're like, we don't like this number, it's too high. So, like, you know,
their idea police's idea of decriminalization is having a super low threshold and everyone can go into mandatory treatment. You know, it's not about stopping the harms of criminalization or drug user liberation. It's about, like, put people away. We don't want to see them. We don't want to deal with them, do something with them.
That's a really good point. Yeah. We're about the human rights, right? I'd like to say that too. Like, even furthermore, like the police, you know what I mean? This isn't a police moment. This is a human. I'd say too, we're engaging in the conversations now that this is also more than a health issue. It's actually a human rights issue, that people deserve to be treated as humans, regardless of what is being put into their bodies. And that this is, in my mind, something that has become a tremendous human rights issue. And maybe it's one day a class action down the line, not now, because everyone's broke, as you heard. And, you know, like, you know, but you get my point, right? But again, all of this, the stigma is behind all of those lines, and they're absolutely right. As a drug user, it's like, I was talking to my colleague about this yesterday. It's like a glass ceiling. You can only get so far and you don't see it. Okay. So they don't tell you, because you use drugs and from your street, we're not going to do this. They just don't. Okay. Just like racists don't, they say, before they say some racist, I'm not a racist, but, you know, both those things you can throw right away because you know they're not true.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think, like, you know, 20 years ago when Bandu was doing its thing back then, there was a lot of, like, hatred for drug users, like, straight up, like, you're the scum of the earth, mm-hmm. like, you should die, please go away. And it was being publicly said. So it was really easy for the movement to, like, come together and be like, that's completely up. Like, the government is saying this, the people are saying it. But what we're getting now is, like, a watered down, like, that is such a great idea, but, like, politically, it's going to be really hard. Ooh, funding structures are just not there yet. And so, like, there are no hard no's. There are a lot of, like, we support you, but. And so it's impossible to, like, you, like, you know, Mayor blah 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 said this, like, go after him, this is how we move change, because it's like, it's muddied by a lot of, like, well, when we bring it to Health Canada, it'll be like this, and, you know, where are we going? And so it's hard to know when it's a win and when it's not a win, where before it was like, you knew people hated you, they didn't like you. That's in the room clear. Where now it's like, you get invited to the conversation, but then there's probably a conversation happening behind the main one, and so we have to be really strategic, and, you know, it's hard to know what to do, if we should continue to be in the room and then it, like, let that conversation just happen without us. That makes no sense. But at the same time, like, they're going to keep inviting police and policing agencies to these conversations, so you know, we're at a new time in drug policy as an activist organization to be like, what is our role in this and how do we push forward when there continues to be these agencies that are really trying to like keep the status quo and to keep their jobs. Like,
yeah, there you go.
You know, they're in those rooms because they want to make sure that police are still as active in criminalization as they possibly can be, because that's literally their job. So if they're not there in the room and they're not making the policies, then all of a sudden we don't need as many police, and like they're a union. So why are they in the room? It makes no sense.
That was part of a conversation with Brittany Graham, Acting Executive Director of the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, or VANDU, Ellie Taylor with VANDU and the Western Aboriginal Harm Reduction Society, and Caitlin Shane, staff lawyer at the Pivot Legal Society.
I don't think anybody sets out to be an addict.
It got really heavy after my ex assaulted me. They put me on a lot of prescription medications.
Injection drug user looks like 99% of the population on Earth.
What stigma does is it creates shame. It drives people underground. And when you drive things underground, you make them truly dangerous.
That PSA is courtesy of the Harm Reduction Action Center, Denver, Colorado. Find them on the web at harmreductionactioncenter.org. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
Biggest myths and one of the biggest realities is one that we ourselves perpetrate, and that's that somehow merely ending prohibition is all that we need to do. Because it's not. It's not enough. It doesn't mean anything. We could end all the drug laws now. It wouldn't change a lot. Because we'd still have racially biased law enforcement. We'd still have horrible social inequities. We'd still have massive, massive differences in access to health care, to education, to social capital, to economic capital, and to every other thing because of the horribly ingrained racist and classist attitudes that we still have in this country. It's an awful, awful truth. But that's the other part of busting reality, of busting myths, is putting forth the reality. We're busting reality. Is it backward? Yeah, it's time to bust
putting reality under arrest.
Exactly.
Well, I've been watching it for a while now.
Here's more from my recent conversation with Eris Nix from the Drug User Liberation Front. You mentioned the election. Any thoughts?
What happened?
Nothing. Yeah, what happened?
Literally nothing happened. They shuffled cabinet. Like, no, I think the net change of seats was, like, remarkable. Maybe the, like, Bloc Québécois or whoever the Quebec Separatist Party might have, like, switched out the Progressive Conservatives in Quebec, but other than that, it's like NDP and Liberals just like swap seats with no net change. Or, you know, I can't even remember how much money they spent on the election, but it was something obscene, like $600 million, and I'm just like, so you spent $600 million to have nothing happen? Like, what? Good job, you guys. You know, imagine what Dolph could do with $600 million, right? And that's the whole thing, that when Patty Daly, or however you say her name, spoke to city council, and like that, at that time, they just announced $131 million of addictions funded. None of that funding went to Safe Supply. $0, you know. So it's just like, I'm like, what are you guys? Well, what they're trying to do is kill people and have careers. That's what I think at the end of the day. And everyone's too afraid to say anything. You know, when everyone's tied down to something that prevents them from being able to be, you know, politically active. I guess at the end of the day, that's something, you know, all these horrible things that have happened to me, like being divorced and having no family and all this stuff. I'm like, I'm not tied down to anyone. So like the only threats people can leverage are threats against me, not about people I love, which makes me, well, it enables me to do a lot of things that, you know, an otherwise rationally, you know, a rational person probably wouldn't do. Like, there's no reason to put yourself at tremendous risk if you yourself can stay safe, if you're going to harm the people you love by putting yourself at risk, you know? It's a very funny situation to find myself in, because I'm like, I don't know who else would be willing to go out on the limb I've gone out on, except someone in my position and someone with my skills and background, right? And I can say the same thing about Jeremy. So it's just kind of a right place at the right time. Like the all of this just falls into your lap, and then you're like, damn, here I am, you know? I mean, my closing thoughts, I guess, are just, I think it's important for people to understand that it's not just us who are capable of doing this. Other people, you know, and they are, I think we're starting to see the shift of people trying to be like, hey, if Dolph's doing this, let's do it too. And that's where real change is going to come from. It comes from the, you know, interpersonal solidarity, right? And I think we'll see transformative changes, and I think they're going to be slow, which is unfortunate. And again, I make a comparison to the AIDS crisis, where it's just like, there's this famous photo, or at least I think it's famous, maybe that's just because I'm a gay person, but of the San Francisco men's choir. And it's like them now, and they have, you know, proportionally all the members of this like 400 person choir, which I think is 90% of them died of HIV AIDS. And they have their backs turned to the audience, and the other 10% have their fronts turned to the audience. And, you know, that's a terribly, terribly sad thing to think about, you know, all these people that aren't with us, and how much the gay community had to go through to see changes and destigmatization around HIV and AIDS. And I think it's going to be the same thing with drugs. We're going to see a lot more death before things get better. And I don't really like that, but I'm like, you know, for those of us that are prepared to stand up to power because we know what the death feels like, I'm like, those are my people, and I have infinite respect for them. So, you know, anyone out there that's doing this or wants to do this, I'm sure, you know, you can email us through the Dolph drugusereliberationfront@gmail.com email. That's drugusereliberationfront@gmail.com. You know, reach out. We'll always talk to people. I mean, we're both, myself and Jeremy, are quite busy, obviously, but, you know, if you're not just literally like, can you send me an ounce of heroin to where I live? I'm like, you need the heroin. You know, I'm like, that's not what we do. But if you want to understand how to do it yourself, I'm like, we're more than willing to teach you how to scale the model so that you can, you know, keep your own people safe. And that's what this is about at the end of the day. As much as there's all this anger and, you know, at least for me, there's a lot of anger, it's more about, you know, love and safety than it is about being an angry person. So, you know, keep love in your heart and keep hope in your heart, even through very dire and hopeless circumstances. And it's very hard to do, you know, it's a very hard thing to do. I've seen a lot of people burn out, and I've seen a lot of people go crazy, you know, for lack of a better term, and which is really unfortunate. I'm just like, you know, even the death count, that's one thing, but the health and social ramifications of just what this is doing to people's lives, who know people who have passed away, or who know people who are at risk of overdose, the stress and the damage that's doing, you know, let alone the damage that the carceral institutions are doing to people, right?
Aris, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks thanks for interviewing me, and I hope we can see some good things happen in the upcoming year. I can't believe it's almost 2022. That's wild. Time flies and airplanes crash, you know?
That was from a conversation with Aris Nix from the Drug User Liberation Front in Vancouver, British Columbia. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.